CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we have great expectations for 2024 from Boca Chica, Texas, and other launch sites that are approved. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black and also helps me with the irony of the fact that we're never sure when SpaceX is going to fire that Starship. Bob, a very good evening to you. SpaceX has a plan for 2024. Do I read this correctly? 140 launches? That dwarfs everything.
All right. Well, you're more optimistic than I am. There was a hearing in the Senate this week in which executives were talking to senators about the regulatory burdens they're dealing with. But during the presentation by Bill Gerstenmaier, who now works for former NASA bureaucrat, he now works for SpaceX, he testified that the SpaceX is going to attempt to do 12 flights per month next year. That would be 144 flights in the year. That's what they're going to attempt. They're going for 100 flights this year, which they're going to come up, I think, a little short, but they might make it still. Now, getting 12 launches a month seems to be a challenge, but it's not an unreasonable one for SpaceX, because so far this year they're routinely launching more than six times per year, sometimes as much as eight or nine. And they've actually tried to do launches almost daily for stretches. Their biggest problem hasn't so much been the company, but weather and scheduling at Cape Canaveral, and scheduling having to do with the number of drone ships they have to pick up the first stages. But that's what they're going to try to do, 144 launches. They could do it. There's a possibility they could do it. But the reason I have doubts they're going to do it, John, and I have doubts that Starship might launch out of Boca Chica, is because what that Senate hearing was all about. That Senate hearing was put together to let the executives talk about how the FAA and the regulatory burdens of the federal government is basically shutting down the commercial space industry. Gerstenmaier was pointing out that the FAA's commercial space, quote, needs at least twice the resources they have today for licensing rocket launches. Other companies, including Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin, said the same kind of things. SpaceX put forth in its presentation a list of 10 suggestions that the federal government could do to kind of straighten things up. The most important one of those was saying that FAA should not be in the business of missing assurance. That means their job is not to decide, try to figure out whether the mission can be successful or not. They don't have the qualifications to do that. They're paper pushers. All they should be involved in is mission safety to the public, which means organizing, scheduling, making sure a launch doesn't interfere with the range or with aviation, and that's it. That would simplify their job enormously, because right now they're getting involved with trying to make sure a mission is a success. I'm sure they have the ability to make sure Starship is going to be a success. Oh, yeah, they know that. It's ridiculous. So that was what this was about. A lot of senators agreed with them, but whether this Congress can pass any law to change this is a hard question. Once again, also, the focus of the meeting, even though SpaceX made a lot of suggestions, the bottom line is that everyone was saying, give the FAA more resources. But that's no one ever talks about cutting back on their ability to regulate, because what we've been having over the last 20, 50 years is mission creep. The government grabs a little bit more regulatory power than it's supposed to have. Then it requires additional resources, so rather than cut back on what it's doing, which it shouldn't do, they give it more resources, which allows it to grab more power, which requires more resources, which gives them the power to grab more power, and on the merry-go-round runs. We should be trying to cut back on the FAA. I don't think they're going to do it, but that's at least what there was an effort by the industry to tell Congress and the Senate that there's a big problem right now, and it's preventing the American space industry from going forward. And let me go right to an example of that, John. One of my stories on Behind the Black today. Varda is a company that wants to launch unmanned capsules which would robotically, in space, be manufacturing products that could be sold on Earth. And one of the main products they want to do is pharmaceuticals to help cure HIV, AIDS, that can't be manufactured on Earth. They know they can do this in space. They could manufacture them in space. In fact, Varda launched the capsule earlier this year where it was actually manufacturing these HIV pharmaceuticals in space. They want that capsule to come back down with the pharmaceuticals. They can then sell those pharmaceuticals, make a profit, and demonstrate that this kind of work makes money. But guess what? The FAA and the military has refused to issue VADA a license to land its recoverable capsule at its Utah range that, by the way, NASA just used to bring back the OSIRIS-REx sample capsule. But a private company? No, we're not letting you do it. It's too dangerous. NASA capsules are perfectly safe, but you are a private enterprise. We're not going to let you. And so VADA basically has to abandon that capsule. They can't bring it back, so it's a loss. Not only is it a complete financial loss for VADA, but they can't even bring it back to demonstrate that their concept works, which is really what they're trying to do at the very beginning. They're a startup. So what are they doing right now? They're looking to Australia. They're in negotiations with a private range in Australia for landing rights so they can bring the capsules back in Australia. This is the American government today. It's hostile to American business and doing everything it can to block what American business can do. I will say that VADA is really threatened here by this, just like Virgin Orbit was destroyed by the bureaucracy in Great Britain, by delays and blockages. And it's really disgusting, and unfortunately, that's where we are right now, John.
Bob, are they looking at the same range that brought back Hayabusa 1? I remember that because that was down there.
You know, that's a good question. I have to do some checking. It might be the same range, but I can't answer that question off the top of my head. I have to go look.
Roscosmos is troubled. It's troubled too. It's got a leak on Nauka, the module at ISS it can't fix. It crashed on the moon, and now it's advancing a schedule that seems ambitious. Let's be generous, Bob.
So what's happened is that the division within Roscosmos that builds all of Russia's interplanetary spacecraft, it's called Lavochkin. It's been doing this. It used to build the Venus probes that was so successful during the Soviet era. But, of course, Lavochkin has not built a successful interplanetary probe in almost four decades. And every single international probe that they have built has failed. But that doesn't matter in Russia because Russia has no competition. Everything's under control of the government. And they divide up territories by the divisions in Roscosmos like mobsters during the Prohibition era. So, for example, Energia has the launch market and the megabytes, and no one else can do that but them. And Lavochkin, it controls planetary missions, and no one else can do it but them. And they built the Luna 25 lander that failed in August, and so now they've issued a revised schedule for up to 6 different missions over the next decade and a half, which will include orbiters, landers, and a rover. And this new revised schedule delays the next launch a little bit while they try to deal with the failure of Luna 25. But as noted by Anatoly Zak on his article about this, this latest strategy relied on the development timeframes that had never been demonstrated by Lavochkin in comparable projects in the past 3 decades. In other words, they never get things done on schedule anyway, and then when they launch it, finally, it fails. Now, none of this abysmal record is going to cost the Lavochkin anything, because once again, they own this territory in Russia, and the government's not going to let anyone else compete against them. There is nobody else. And so what this tells us is this revised schedule should not be taken seriously, and don't expect Russia to get a lot accomplished in the next decade or so.
There's a geosynchronous spy satellite looking over other commercial satellites. This goes to that point, Bob, that militarizing space has many flavors. And surveillance is part of militarization. We know this. Good information brings good warfighting. So there's no treaty in place to stop somebody from looking over your rivals, correct? And suggesting
that's correct. And even if it was a treaty, you really couldn't do anything to stop it anyway. I mean, the treaties don't do anything. It's like, you can't pass a law to stop a criminal from doing something. So Russia, it can accomplish some things in surveillance. So Russia, for the second time, has launched what we call an inspector spy satellite. It's the second time they've done this, where this satellite flies in geosynchronous orbit relatively close to a commercial communication satellite. And What it's probably doing is it's gathering the communications data that comes off that satellite. That's probably what it's doing. It might be taking high-resolution images of the satellite itself, but it's probably just feeding off the information that's coming up and down from that satellite. And the satellite we think is an Intelsat satellite, but I'm not sure. This is something they have managed to do. In terms of space exploration, this is not the cutting edge, but nonetheless, they are doing it, and there's really no way to stop them. The only response you can do is either, it's an arms race. You either have to do it yourself, or you have to design anti-satellite technology to take such a satellite down. And of course, that creates space junk, so it's not a simple problem to solve, John.
Israel looking to Starlink in a similar fashion to Starlink used in Ukraine? Are we looking at war fighting?
Yes, it's related to this. It's actually related to the Gaza war, but it's different than the Ukraine. The Ukraine was given initially free use of Starlink by Elon Musk and SpaceX. Eventually, the SpaceX said, you got to start paying, and after a lot of kerfuffle, they agreed to finally start paying. Truth is, they're not paying. The United States is paying in the case of the Ukraine. In Israel, Israel doesn't ask for handouts to begin with. They went straight to SpaceX, and they're now negotiating with SpaceX to get access to Starlink in the Gaza region, in that area. This would allow I think one of the reasons they want to get Starlink is then it would allow them to block cell phone communications in that region. It wouldn't interfere with them. They'd have Starlink, and they could block Hamas from using cell phones for communication and planning of attacks. That's, I think, their idea. Now, whether SpaceX will go along with this or not, but once again, Israel wants to be a customer here and just buy the service, but then SpaceX has to decide whether it wants to get involved in this fight or not. I would think Elon Musk would be willing to, but it gets tricky, and so that's we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Private enterprise in India, a very positive development. Did this come as a surprise to you, Bob?
No. This is actually in line with what India, the Modi government's now been doing for the last few years, very much more aggressively, especially in the last 2 years after the panic of Wuhan in India. Their space agency literally shut down and accomplished nothing. And that has given, I think, the Modi government ammunition to say, you guys can't do it. We got to let private enterprise do it. So they're in the process of transitioning from a government-run program that controls everything to letting private enterprise compete and do it for them. And one of the things the Indian government has said is that I saw developed a new rocket called the SmallSat Launch Vehicle, SSLV, just before COVID. And that rocket is designed to compete for the small satellite business that's growing right now. The Modi government has said that ISRO, we're going to take that away from ISRO. We want to give it to a private launch company and let them run it completely. And so something like 30 private rocket companies in India have submitted bids for SSLV. One of them is a company called Agnicol, which has actually done engine tests and is now planning its first suborbital launch in mid-November, just a month or so away, less weeks away. And in the process of this, they have raised $26.7 million in new private investment capital, bringing their total to about $40 million in cash on hand. This company and another one called Skyroot are probably the two private launch companies in India that are in the lead, because Skyroot's already done a suborbital launch and has raised cash. But there are others as well. And one of these companies is going to get SSLV, lock, stock, and barrel, and that'll make them a major player in the launch market right off the bat. And so, yes, India's been moving towards private enterprise now for about 3 years aggressively. Their space policy is now designed to take power from ISRO and give it to the private enterprise. And they're in that battle. NASA's taken about a decade in the United States to make that switch. It's going to take probably that long in India, but at least several years into the battle already, John.
iSpace being rewarded for landing on the moon by Japan. How much?
$80 million. But what's significant about this, John, is that $80 million grant, it's not really a grant, it's a contract to build a larger lunar module for $80 million. But the contract doesn't come from Japan's space agency, JAXA. This is the same thing as in India. JAXA is a space agency in Japan. It runs everything. It's controlled everything. It's done a poor job in almost everything, especially in the launch market. And so the Japanese government has now issued a contract to iSpace. They attempted to make a lunar landing earlier this year, and it failed, but they have a second mission and a third mission right now planned. And they're a private company that wants to build lunar landers. And so the Japanese government has issued them a contract for $80 million to build a third larger lander. They have two under construction, right, two designs. This will be bigger even. And to land sometime after 27 on the moon. And what's interesting about the contract, it appears to be fixed price, and it appears that the government's only going to pay out money as the company achieves milestones. This is right out of the playbook that NASA's been following that's been so successful in the last decade. So once again, Japan finally, it's years behind everybody else, but finally Japan looks like it's following the same procedure where it's taking control from its government agency and trying to give it to private enterprise in a competitive market. And Japan's way behind in this. It's like 3 to 5 years behind India in trying to do this. But at least it's now finally beginning
Bob
to do it.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.